Well, welcome. And welcome to the Eightfold Path, the third session. I'm Susan, and I'm just going to take a moment to introduce my colleague here, Jim, for anyone who might not know Jim. He's been practicing here at Insight Santa Cruz since 2006. And he was trained by Gil Fronsdahl and Andrea Fella to lead this Eightfold Path program. And currently, Jim is serving as the ISC board president.
Thank you. And I will also introduce Susan in reciprocation. Susan has been practicing here since 1997. She actually was one of the founders of the Insight Meditation Center where Gil teaches and I was trained. And in the interim, she came over here and she's now been involved here as a teacher and also doing as a healthcare chaplain in the community. So she's quite versed in all of this as well. So we might as well go ahead and do a short set. People are still coming in, possibly because of the traffic light, possibly just because of the nice weather. So we'll do a guided set for a few minutes, just to settle in here. Since we're dealing with intentions this week, I would like you to take a thought, take a moment, and as you settle into your meditation and think about what your intentions are. Why are you here today? What motivates you? What leads you to this practice? Everything we do starts with an intention. I mean, even if it's something as simple as lifting your arm, before you lift your arm, there's that inclination to do it. When you're sitting on the pillow and your leg starts to bother you, you know, there's sometimes that struggle, do I move my leg, do I not move my leg? Those are all various little types of intentions, and then we go on up to big intentions. So for the next few minutes, think about those intentions. If you're going to work with your breath and focus on the breath, do you have the intention of following your breath? Do you have the intention of feeling your breath at a certain point? Or just simply the intention of counting your breath as you go up and around, following, or maybe just relaxing, being tranquil, being in here and enjoying it. So settle in, do your practice with some little part of your mind. Watch your intentions as they rise and disappear. They won't stay for long. They'll fade. It's interesting to watch them do that. So settle in and follow your breath. Be aware of the moment. Be aware of your feelings about the moment. How does it feel to you? Our intentions, our actions arise as much or more from our feelings than our thoughts. Thank you. Nice way to start the day today. So we've been at it a month, and normally at this point, I would like to give you a chance to, if there's something during this last month and write to you that is pressing that you don't think got answered, that you need to answer before we move on, I think this is the time to do that. I will warn you that with the topic today of right intention, we're not going to get away from right view quite yet. I have to start with right view and sort of slide into right intention for it to all to make sense. But if there's anything either for the people online or the people in the room that they have a question or a comment or something that's come up with their practice in the last month that they would like to clarify, we're open to do that now before we open up the topic generally into right intention. So is there anyone who feels they need to have something clarified or anything? Okay, well, it seems that then you've been doing a wonderful amount of practice and you've got it all figured out. That's
good. We didn't say that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a good conclusion. It's a good conclusion to come from.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Just if I wanted to not narrow it down, but think of two things to highlight when I think of right view, could it be, all actions, there's consequences for all of our actions and the Four Noble Truths?
One of the aspects of the right view is definitely that all things are causal, that there are consequences, their reaction there, that and all things arise from causes. And that's one of the topics we'll start with in just a minute, because I want to clarify. It's an important topic, and we will be clarifying it more. So thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
I could say, something comes up a lot for me, not a lot, but maybe more than it should, is the idea that, our choices and the way we live, we hope to have a certain view. And then we meet with others who have views that are not the same. Like, for instance, I'm just going to give an example of business. A businessman who wants to maximize his profit, and you're trying to be gentle and explain what you need, and they're trying to maximize, and they think you have the same view that you just. Want to get more, but I see that a lot at people who just are trying to all are maximizing the relationship for whatever benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I just try to avoid those type of situations, but you can't avoid them everywhere,
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, I guess it's a lifelong process, but
yeah,
is there a way?
I'm for the people online, I don't know if you could hear them, or haven't been passing them up the microphone right now. The question is basically about the differences of views for different people. And sometimes there's conflicts between those views, and certainly differences, and the way of how you deal with that. And I mean, that's inevitable. And it's not necessarily wrong that there should be different views, because different people come from different conditions. This goes back to conditionality. And there can, in fact, be multiple viewpoints that are both correct. So the question then for us as Buddhists is what is the proper way of finding our way through all this, finding freedom, finding happiness? And that's kind of what the Eightfold Path is really all about. It's that mechanism. It's really asking you to look at why and how another person's views has various effects on you, and to clarify your own views and what's happening in the moment. It doesn't mean you're going to get rid of all conflict in the world, obviously, nor all pain in the world, but it does offer the possibility of finding a way in which you can be comfortable in the world, happy, have a very liberating and successful life in spite of all those things, because those things aren't the things that undermine you. And that's kind of what Buddha, this whole Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths is pointing out, is what is really the source of all of this. And that's what the Buddha is asking you to look at, is what is the underlying cause. And when you, as you start to recognizing what that underlying, the truth of that underlying cause, and can work from that point of view, you find freedom. I mean, that's what freedom is about, is being, unentangling yourself from some of these things in the external world and making your own happiness not quite so conditioned on it, not quite so dependent on it. You're not going to get rid of those people, but you don't have to be subject to what they're doing. And hopefully this program is a step in that direction. Okay, anyone else? Do you have anything you want to
add? I was just wondering, the people online can't hear
right
from here, right? And I was looking for it, but I couldn't. There it is. Okay, we'll use this from now on so that the people online can hear you.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I don't know if the other people have what I have, but I realize I can turn up the speaker here, and I was able to hear. At the beginning, I couldn't hear, and then I turned it up, and then I could hear them. So I don't know if you guys are able to do that, but anyway.
Yeah, that's helpful, and I would also like to be able to give everybody not to have to do that, and the reason is it affects my recording as well, because I record this for people who aren't here, and they can't turn up the microphone, their speakers. Gosh.
Okay, so we'll pass the microphone around in here then.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, so let's go on into, I'll talk a little bit about right intention. And to start it off, I'm going to take the first verse from the Dharmapada, which is one of the more poetic writings in the Pali Canon and a number of other places. It probably dates back to about the 3rd century BC, and there were apparently precursors before that. And this is probably one you're aware of, but I think it's important for us today here. The mind is a forerunner of all actions. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with a corrupt mind, suffering follows, as the wheels of a follow the hooves of an ox pulling a cart. Mind is the forerunner of all action. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with a serene mind, happiness follows as surely as one shadow. So this is basically, in a nutshell, a lot of what the Buddha is saying in the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, that the world we live in, to a great extent, is created by our own minds, our own stories, our own ways of interacting in the world. And a lot of the feelings we have, a lot of the experiences we have come from those stories. And in fact, the first and noble truth, you know, that there's suffering, that there's something out there that unsettles us, something out there that makes it difficult to be happy, and it's conditioned, that arises because of other things in the world. And the primary condition for that, according to the Buddha, is within our own mind. It's craving, it's aversion, it's delusion, it's aspects of our own mind. So what the Four Noble Truths is putting forth, as far as right view, is that there is a way of seeing the world. There's a couple of factors in seeing the world that are extremely important. And one is the one that the question was alluded to earlier. And that is that the world is causal. That what we do matters. Think what goes around comes around, in a sense. And that manifests in various ways within the Buddhist tradition. Karma being one of them. I mean, karma gets turned into a lot of metaphysical things when you try and reach beyond this moment into future lifetimes, into other things. But really, it's just a reflection of that very simple idea that what happens because there's a reason for it happening. And once you create reasons for things happening, those are factors and forces that are going to go on into the future to bring about results. So if you want to take it to the extent of it can lead from this one lifetime to another lifetime, that's fine. But that's not what the Buddha was talking about. He was basically saying that that's true in all cases, that even within this lifetime, if you choose to do things that lead to harmony, if you choose to do things that lead to well-being, that the probability is those types of things are going to come back and be there for you. Even other fairly highly more sophisticated aspects of Buddhism, as you learn and teach, you get involved with things like dependent originations. You'll hear that term. It's just really another reflection of the same idea that certain things, when they come into existence, as the Buddha said, when something comes into existence, it will cause other things to come into existence. When certain things disappear from existence, it's going to cause other things to do it. But this is it. Back in that time, there were a number of different other theories. There were, predestination theories, and there were theories that about have no causality and that everything just sort of happens like a chaotic accident. So the Buddha was very much behind this idea that there is cause and effect in the world, and the whole of reality is based on that. And that's part of the reason that he can offer freedom, because and a path to freedom. Because if you didn't have causality, you couldn't choose to do the things that need to be done to make the changes that will come about. So that plus this idea that there are these factors in the world that come into existence that disrupt our happiness, make it difficult to achieve the ends that we would like to have. Because I mean, basically, being happy in this lifetime is one of the most important things that can happen to you. Feeling secure, feeling safe, having a place where you can be and live a life that you consider to be meaningful, worthwhile. These are all forms of happiness. The problem is that in a lot of cases, we misunderstand, or we have been given through our culture, through our society, views of what those causes are that may not actually be valid. They may be mistaken. Obviously, we live in a very highly materialistic culture. And so we're, from the time we're born, given this idea that things have the ability to make us happy. And as a result, what that does, because views and intentions are so tightly linked to each other, is we develop this idea that then what we need to do, what we intend to do, is to acquire wealth and fame. And if we get that wealth and fame, then we're going to be happy. Unfortunately, as a lot of people find out, that's not true. There are people with great wealth and fame that are obviously not very happy. And there are many examples of people around the world that don't have a lot of wealth and fame and live very happy lives. So what he is asking to do in the Buddhist path is to mindfully start to examine those assumptions, that those assumptions are not in the world out there. They are, in fact, in your mind, in it's inside of you that those things are taking place. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to throw those things out, because it's obviously true that there is certainly some truth to the idea that having things such as food is going to be very important to being happy. If you don't have food, if you're starving, you're obviously not going to be very happy. That's part of the reason that he looks at a middle way between the extremes of asceticism and indulgence. And what he's saying about that, though, is that it's not the desire for these things that's an issue for us, because sometimes that want, that need is appropriate, such as it is for food or for housing or for safety or for lots of other things. In other cases, it's not quite so appropriate. You know, your third, fourth Tesla or whatever might not make you much happier. And he, if you look at the story of his awakening, on the night of his awakening, he had gone through all these ascetic practices. He'd been through meditation practice. All of them he had rejected. And one of the things he remembered as he sat down to work on reaching an understanding of suffering was an incident in his childhood. And this is also probably a story you've heard, that he was laying near a field where his father was doing ritual plowing. It was a quiet, you know, nice day. And in that, his mind became calm. He became tranquil. He basically experienced a great deal of joy and happiness, you know, but no wanting, not going out after things. But the happiness was there, the sense of safety. And, you know, that's an experience that's probably not uncommon to anyone in this room. I'm sure there's been summer days when you've been laying around the pool or, you know, off on a walk or whatever, looking at the sunset, and things just settle. They're tranquil. There's nothing you really have to bring into the situation. There's nothing you really have to push out of the situation. You're just there, and there's a sense of calmness, a sense of awe, a sense of beauty, a sense of belonging, a sense of quiet happiness. And he looked at that and he said, "But if that is there, is there a path to happiness? Is there a way of doing that?" And that's where he really started looking at the idea of what is it that brings about this other stuff, this unhappiness. And what he realized in that is that it was not the fact that that you can appreciate having things, or that you can appreciate the need to work in the world and do those things, but rather it's often the wanting that gets to us. And in fact, if you look deeply into wanting, wanting is a great deal of the suffering. If you've ever, you know, if you think about, like, you get this desire for something, you know, be it the Teslas, be it a watch, be it whatever, and you anticipate finding it, you anticipate searching for it, you anticipate paying for it. During that time, as soon as that wanting starts to arise, there is suddenly this feeling of lack. Something's not right. Something's missing. Something's not the way it should be, which is very different than that experience of sitting in nature and just being there and being happy. And that sense of lack, that sense of something being wrong, is actually a point of suffering, because we're not happy. We don't have it. We're incomplete, or something's incomplete because it's not there. It may not be, you know, some great trauma suffering. But there is that sense, as soon as you start wanting that type of thing, that something is wrong, that the dukkha is starting to arise just by that act of wanting and seeking. And so he started to focus on that idea. And that's part of the reason that you see in the second noble truth, he says that craving is that thing that goes beyond simply recognizing the need for food and home and so forth, but really, I got to have this. This is what defines me. This is what is important. And oftentimes, then it leads not only from that to defining yourself and who you are. You know, it may be very valid that having you do need material wealth in society to rent a house and do all the other things you need to do, and you may want a good job to do that. That may lead to you to get an education and everything else. So all of that is very, very useful. But let's say that doesn't work out quite the way you wanted it to. Then what that's going to do is, not only you wanted all this stuff and there's a certain suffering there, but now by failing to do it, you start to define yourself in terms of that failure. You know, why did I not get that job? Why did I not do that? Whatever. And again, you simply bring into existence even more and more suffering. So when the Buddha looked at all of this, he looked at the things that motivate us to do this. Why are we doing these things? And one of the things he felt he came up with as being a right intention of the things that we should be trying to pursue then is renunciation. Now, renunciation in this culture generally has a really bad rap. It's a word we don't like. It's like, you know, it's almost like asceticism. I'm going to force myself to do something or whatever. But that's not really the way the Buddha meant the word. What the Buddha meant more closely was an idea of letting go, that an intention of simply letting go. And what he wanted people to learn to let go of was this wanting. Because if you can let go of the wanting, if you can appreciate, it's again, going back to the scene in the mountains, if you can appreciate where you are and the things that are happening and the camaraderie and the networking and everything else that's present in your life, and not get fixated on this craving, on this wanting, on this pulling you in that direction, you're much better able to be free and do what you want. And you're much more likely that you're going to find that you're happy and you have a world that you're comfortable with and satisfied. So for renunciation, for the Buddha, it was more a process of letting go of wanting, a letting go of things that bring harm to our ability to do these things. Another of the things that he looked at, the other two intentions that he felt were right intentions, in this idea of the Four Noble Paths, of the view of the Four Noble Paths, was to not have ill will and not have aversion, because those are two other things that tend to undermine us in general. If you have aversion, which in our life can range anywhere from anger to hatred to simply not liking something, generally they poison us much more than they poison anybody else. You know, when you're angry with someone, you may be able to yell and scream, but I can almost guarantee that that's not going to be the end of it. You're going to take it home. It's going to, in some cases, keep you from sleeping at nights. You're going to plot revenge. There's lots of things that go on. Most of that has absolutely no effect in the world outside of your own head, but all of that is undermining your own happiness, your own ability to go home, be with your family, be present in the moment and find the things that are of value there. And similarly, the other one is ill will. Hatred, that type of thing. Obviously, you just have to look around the world today and see how much damage that's doing to everybody. Whether you're in the middle of where there are battles taking place or you're on the sidelines watching people being harmed. I mean, the root of understanding compassion is to look at people who are in those situations and that type of suffering and are helpless to do anything about it. You know, that's the quality that really brings forth the feelings of compassion in most people. So those then are the elements that the Buddha felt that you would want to establish as intentions. And then intentions feed back on our views, because we normally act from our views. You know, if we believe something is true, if we believe the world is a certain way, that's going to narrow down and focus your intentions on things. But then your intentions are going to turn around and affect what your views are, what can be accomplished, what can't be accomplished, where do you put your effort, where do you not put your effort. So these tend to feed back into the process. So these qualities of right view and right intention are really to set the stage, set the orientation, and to get you started focusing on the places where you can make a difference. And that where you can make that difference the most effectively is in your own mind, because and it's not by forcing, obviously, because you're going to not be able to want to not want. I mean, that's a hopeless situation, and you know, and pretty much anything else, you're not going to be able to make it a goal and forcefully create it as a goal, which is why the Buddha then came up with whole system of mindfulness. And mindfulness is not trying to make something happen. Mindfulness is being present with it. So even the Buddha talked about in some of his suttas, he has a sutta in which he's talking about sitting and meditating and thoughts of cruelty, of being cruel to other people came to his mind. I mean, you know, that's not something we would normally think of the Buddha ever doing, thinking about wanting revenge or anything else. But even the Buddha admitted that those types of thoughts came into his mind. But what he did then is he sat with him. And he looked at him and he said, you know, what are the benefits of these? What are the harms of these? What will this do if I go down this path of indulging in these thoughts of cruelty? Well, they're going to harm me because, as I pointed out, they're going to bring suffering into him. They're going to create harm within his mind. And if he acts on them or he allows them to act on them, then they're going to harm other people. And he also realized that where the mind spends most of its time is where the mind is going to incline. That's the way it's going to go. So if you engage in thoughts of metta, of loving kindness, of compassion, your life, because of cause and effect, is going to move in that direction. If you engage in thoughts of anger and hatred and these become your fantasies, then that's where you're going to move. So his intention then was to not move in that direction. So his intention became of non-harming, an intention of non-ill will, an intention of renunciation. But not by force, but simply by sitting with them, recognizing what value they had to them, what was good, what was bad, and not trying to coerce them. And as he did that, what he found is that they would weaken because he wasn't feeding them. He wasn't causing them stronger. He was recognizing the danger in them. And that allowed him to escape from those types of effects. And that's kind of what we need to, we are going towards too. As we work forward into the other factors in the path, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and so forth, what we're doing is we're looking at the places where we can examine our lives, we can examine what we're doing, we can build intentions that move us in the direction of not being enslaved by our habits, not being enslaved by our non-beneficial inclinations. And that's all you need to do. You don't need to somehow enforce some type of moral purity on yourself, or you don't need to force some type of discipline on yourself. I mean, there is some effort that goes into it, which is why we use the word renunciation, which implies that there is some effort being put into not doing certain things. But it's not that you're giving up the material world. You're not giving up the pleasures that come with life. What you're doing is giving up those things that cause the suffering, the things that cause the wanting, the things that cause the ill will, the things that cause that, and moving in a different direction. So I'll leave it here at this point. And there's questions or whatever on that much. Otherwise, it's just something to reflect on, and we'll keep going. Are there any questions from either in the room or online?
I do have a question, something I've been thinking about as part of my own intention that I want to change. And it has to do with something that I want. But it has to do with something that I want for someone else. That's something that I want for my son. And so I just think that, you know, I mean, in a way, and then I started thinking, well, why is that? What about that? And then I think actually I want it for him, but okay, why do I want it for him? You know, what's the benefit of me to me if he gets this, you know, happiness? I won't go into the whole long story, but because I started at first, I was thinking, well, I don't want that for myself. you know, I want it for somebody else. Isn't that a good thing to want something good for someone else? And I'm talking about more than just, you know, in general. I'm talking about, I want him to have a better job, and I want, you know, really specific things. And then I finally got to the nitty gritty of, well, what's really behind my intention? And is it because I think it's going to make me happy? You know, because it really is something that I want for myself, even though I'm telling myself I want it for him. And I'm also telling myself, isn't that part of being a loving mother? Doesn't that mean I love my son, that I want him to have good things? I want him to have a better car, you know, all that. And what's wrong with that? You know, and I realized that I'm still learning all this, but I'm thinking that really isn't what love is. That love is just as accepting him the way that he is right now, you know, and thinking, you know, wishing goodwill for him in general, but just accepting and loving him the way he is right now in his situation. I mean, he's 40 years old, and he, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do to change things. It's my wishing and wanting it, and that's making me unhappy, of course, that I'm wishing and wanting all the stuff that isn't happening. You know, why isn't he doing this? Why isn't he doing that? You know, driving me crazy. It really has been, you know. And as you know, he's in California, I moved to Hawaii. So it comes with a lot of guilt comes with that, you know, that, well, I moved away, I ran away, so I'm not there to help him. And, oh, you know, so anyway, that all this thing has been developing, and I'm in my mind realizing, what is it that I'm really thinking, you know, and what was I mistaking, thinking this is being a loving mother, and yet I'm miserable. And my wanting all that for him isn't helping him, you know, help get it anyway. So I don't know if that's really very clear to you guys, but it's just my experience that I'm having now. And as you were talking, I thought I heard you say things about wanting things. And so I sort of thought, well, is this a thing, you know, that I want him to have things? But I guess that's a thing. It's not a real physical thing, but it's a strong desire that I'm trying to get rid of that desire. I'm actually, maybe it's an attachment even. I have been reading about attachments, and of course how that makes us unhappy because we're attached to this thing that we don't get. So anyway, kind of a lengthy comment.
That's okay. Yeah. I think what you're talking about, I think, does very much fit with what we're talking about here. The fact that you're thinking about it, the fact you're exploring it, I think is actually a wonderful thing. That's really the best thing you can do with it. Because, you know, again, this goes back to cause and conditions. There's some causes and conditions that you can't go back and change the past. There's reasons that he is where he is and how he is. And, you know, as far as wanting things, I think I also mentioned that sometimes wanting things is not necessarily based on material things. A lot of times, if we look into why we want things, a lot of it has to do with our definition of ourself. You know, I'm a good person if I can do this. This is how you're supposed to, this is how I am supposed to be in the world. And so when the world doesn't go the way you think it should, then you have this conflict. That it can be very threatening sometimes, because it forces you to reevaluate your own identity, and the way you think about yourself and your own success. And so there's a lot of material here that will keep you busy for a while. just keep sitting with it. So I think it's a great thing. And you know, there is reason for acting in the world. You know, you do. A good mother does do what they can for their children in order to give them the best chance they can to have the happiest life they can. So it's not that we shouldn't act on those things. We just need to understand them and be able to see them so that we see not only their benefits, but their pitfalls.
Ah, yes. Very good. Thank you very much. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay, at this point, then we will do probably about a 15-minute breakout group. I'm going to probably bring something up here on the screen that some of you have already seen. See if I can. This is a list of attributes that are that. Okay. These are some attributes that are common. These are published actually by a gentleman by the name of. Let's see if I look it up here. I don't get it wrong. James Clear. James Clear is an expert, if you will call it, in habits, habit formation, getting rid of habits. He published a book called Atomic Habits that did very well. And this list gets put out in various contexts. These are considered to be core values, things that people identify with. This goes back to this identification of self that we're talking about. So what I would kind of like, and it gets used in a lot of different ways, so I'm going to use it in my own way here, is look through it and take one that resonates with you. I don't try and, this is my deepest core value that I'm ever going to have, but just rather today, this is something that resonates with you. And what I would like you to do in your breakout group is think about this and think about how it relates to your view, which is what we're just talking about, your view of yourself. Does this value in its place in your life reflect on how you think about yourself, how you act, what intentions you choose to have and not have? And then just take a little bit of time and talk within the group about why this one and how you think it affects the way you see yourself and the intentions that you choose to have in the world. And what in light of what we've been talking about today, does it change your mind or does it affect your understanding of what core values are and what you should be doing with them? Okay. So we'll put the people who are online. Let's see. I'll leave this up for a minute here so that people can read through and pick it. So I don't have anything to hand out. The people online will need to do one. Just pick one of these, and you don't have to think about and get all of them. So okay. So we'll
I can't.
Put, huh?
Oh. Should there be
thank you. Let me there. Now you got it.
Okay.
There it is.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. So I'll leave it up there for a couple of minutes here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for saying something. I forgot to share the screen. My fault.
Oh, I can't see the whole thing, so I see
No, you can't see the whole thing. I there's a lot of them.
So is there? Oh wait. Oh, maybe I can scroll down. Yeah, see the whole thing. Like half of it. Oh, there we go. Down. There we go. Okay, it's like a scroll, just like a little a preview. Okay.
Okay. Like I say, don't make this a big challenge. Just take one you seem to resonate with and. I just want to explore this idea of values and intentions and your views and how those mental factors of all these things interplay with each other so that you begin to explore that relationship as a mental relationship that precedes how you are, how things occur in the world. Okay, so I'll let you, I guess we've got one. Maybe two groups, do you think, Susan? Three?
Two groups is good.
Okay, two groups. Why don't you go ahead and split up into a couple groups, and then I'll put the people online into a group, and then we'll be there for about 15 minutes. Okay? We'll come back together and then, pick up comments from people online or in the room. And then we'll take a break and go on with the second half of the day when we come back from break. So how was that for everyone? Was it a useful breakout? Does anyone have any comments they'd like to bring to the room or to the group as a whole, either in the room or online? If you're in the room, I'll give you the microphone. If you're online, you have your own microphone. Anyone want this? You don't go into what you said in the group, that we do have confidentiality. If there's comments, it's more about whether it was useful, what you found, whether it made you think about the stuff that we're looking at today. So
I would just like to say how wonderful the program is blending in with my life, and it must be with everybody's life, I guess, but I'm really seeing it. You know, when I first decided to do this, I just was curious, you know, because I've always been a little bit curious about Buddhism, and I'd heard about the Eightfold Path, but I didn't really know what it was or anything. And, you know, I'm so happy to find out that it's a very pragmatic, philosophy or teaching or whether, I don't know what you call it, but I love that it's so pragmatic. And that it's what works, you know, and what brings happiness. And, you know, and I just see all over the place how it fits, you know, my life fits in with what I'm learning, if you know what I mean. Like, it's really been very helpful. And I thank you so much for doing it. And I really look forward to continuing doing this.
Well, thank you. The pragmatic aspect of it is what brought me to it as well. So I agree with you. Yeah.
Thank you. I really like that exercise. I've done all kinds of exercises in my life, that's for sure. But with being given a whole sheet full of words, it's like something just jumped out. It seems like for everybody in my group, some word just jumped out at them. And it was different. Well, two people have the same words, but it fit into their lives in different ways. And I trust it. Like, for instance, if you were just giving us one word to work with, for everybody. You know, we would have done it. We would have done the exercise. But just having the whole page full and having one word just jump out, it just felt very powerful. I think it's what we can make happen for each of us. Like this.
Thank you. I've seen it in various ways. I went through a series of synthetic thing in Vision Jogi recently, basically using the same words. A little bit different exercise, but very similar. Anyone else? Okay, well, let's take a break because we're falling a little bit behind. So we'll go ahead and take a break. And then when we come back, Susan will take over the main part of the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ten minutes.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, so welcome back, and can everyone hear me okay? All right. So I just thought I would start out with just a quote from Ajahn Chah, one of the great Thai masters, who was teacher to many of our first teachers here in the West. And he says, the Eightfold Path is above all other paths in life. Because it properly practiced, it leads directly to complete peace. So if you're looking for more peace in your mind and heart and in your life, then you're in the right place here this afternoon. So happy to practice with you all and hear your thoughts. Today we're looking at the second step on this Noble Eightfold Path, right intention, following right view, which Jim has talked about. And so I wanted to point out that we are keeping in mind that the steps on this Noble Eightfold Path, it's not linear. They all inform one another. So, you know, these first two steps on the path, right view and right intention, are considered to be the wisdom steps on the path. So they inform the other steps on the path. For example, the way we speak, right speech, they inform the way we, hopefully they inform the way we act, right action. And the way we, the way that we practice, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So wisdom, this wisdom, a way of seeing clearly, a way of looking very deeply inside, which is the very definition of this practice that we do, this practice of insight meditation. And so this tradition offers us a way of viewing our human life in terms of suffering and our wish for freedom from suffering. You know, these are the Four Noble Truths that Jim spoke to. And as practitioners, we are probably on this Noble Eightfold Path because we do want more peace, more happiness, in our lives. And so we have this practice of mindfulness that supports us in our ability to see clearly, to understand what are our deepest intentions as we go about our day. And do our intentions support this wish for freedom? We can ask that. Are they in alignment with right view? In other words, using the lens of the Four Noble Truths to frame our experience. And then, you know, do our choices in how we speak and act and live and practice, are these in line with our intentions? So you might ask yourself as you prepare for your daily meditation, what is my deepest intention in doing this practice today? And so as we practice, we really do begin to see more clearly in life, both as we're practicing on the cushion and as we're speaking and acting out in the world, we can really see that our intentions have consequences. Our intentions are what shape our lives. So it's good to slow down in life and to develop this ability to see clearly the intentions behind what we say and do, what we choose to think about. As Jim spoke to, even the Buddha had to examine his negative thoughts using mindfulness and choosing, you know, what is my intention here? Even the Buddha. And so, you know, for us in our life, a simple example of this might be that, you know, we compliment someone. We might compliment someone on how they look, but really what we're doing, if we're aware, is fishing for them to compliment us on how good we look today with our new haircut. Obviously, our deepest intention then is really all about self, right? It's good to know that. Good to know why we say the things that we do, really. And then, you know, looking around us in our world, which can be painful these days, very painful, we can often see that when people believe that they are saying and doing things that are helpful, what can underlie those actions might be an intention that's not really all that beneficial. And we can also see that the actions taken often do not have the expected beneficial results. So, kind of a more complicated example of this from our world, we go to war to fight for what we believe is right, for what we believe is for the greater good. But perhaps the deepest intention is to find an outlet for our righteousness and anger, or our need for power over others. We can bring to mind the Buddha's wisdom, and he taught hatred never ends with hatred, but by love alone is healed. And so, you know, this issue of power over others, which is quite evident in our world these days, I just want to emphasize that when we speak about power in this tradition of insight meditation, you know, we have what is called the Iddhipada, which is translated as the four bases of power. And intention is one of these bases of power. And so in this case, in our tradition, we're talking really about an inner power, right? We're talking about the power over the forces in the mind that cause suffering, the forces of lust, ill will, and hostility. And so this is the power we are developing through this practice that we do, this inner power and the intentions that underlie it. And this is what supports us in walking this Eightfold Path to freedom. This is what supports us in developing really fully the beauty within each of us, the beauty that comes with our ability to let go, with our ability to bring a sense of goodwill and loving kindness out into the world, the beauty that comes with the ability to open our compassionate hearts, first to ourselves and then to our troubled world. So as mindfulness practitioners, we come to see and understand that, as Jim pointed out, all action begins in the mind, begins with our deepest intentions. And, you know, how do we come to investigate, to look deeply enough inside to know what our deepest intentions are? We have this practice that we do, right? This practice of stopping from time to time in our day, stopping, bringing to a halt that kind of incessant busyness and drivenness and doing. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in all that doing. So this ability, this recognition of the importance of just stopping. Ajahn Pasano, who is the most senior Western disciple of Ajahn Chah here in the United States, Ajahn Pasano said, "The importance of stopping is often overlooked." And then there was the Buddha in his interaction with Angulimala, the famous murderer who came and threatened the Buddha and, of course, later became his disciple. When he threatened the Buddha said, "I've stopped, Angulimala, I've stopped." And that just turned something within Angulimala's mind and heart. He became one of the disciples of the Buddha. So a little homework assignment for you this month as you go through the weeks and practicing. Notice when there's agitation and restlessness in your mind, and just stop. Stop for 5 minutes and practice mindfulness of the body. Notice the effect on your body of agitation and restlessness. And then as you go about your day, once again, ask yourself, are my actions in line with my deepest intention? And I want to say, especially when you're driving your car, is the way I'm driving and the thoughts I'm fueling as I drive, are they in line with my deepest intention to be free? So our intentions are everything. They really shape everything. And most people aren't even aware. So we have this practice. And that's one of the things that makes it such a treasure, is that it informs this wisdom aspect of the path, right view and right intention. So before we break up into groups again, I wonder if anyone has any questions or comments on right intention or anything I've said. I see Maria, were you raising your hand? No, I thought I saw someone online. Okay, anyone here in the hall have a question? Or a comment, or about practicing with right intention.
I like the way that you.
Oh, could we give you the microphone so that I can hear you clearly, Melissa, and everyone can hear you? Yeah.
I like the way that you put kind of a process to it that helps me remember. So like one, when you're feeling agitated, it's take a, to two, take a step back.
Stop.
And think about kind of what's bothering me or what's making this situation seem not in line with my deepest intention. Was that how you said it? I just want to make sure that I kind of got that process right.
Yeah, this wonderful awareness that especially in our actions, the way we speak and act in the world, and the way, and when we're on the cushion, or and when we feel that sense of drivenness, that first of all, it's not all that healthy for the body, number one. And number two, when we have that drivenness in the mind, it's really hard to see clearly, right? And so what is useful and helpful for me when I have that sense of forward motion, restlessness, is to just stop and feel where it is I feel it in my body, mindfulness of the body. I find that to be more helpful than kind of think it through, to just stop and relax wherever that agitation and restlessness is in the body. And in that way, a certain knowing can come up and, oh, wait, I kind of see what's going on now. But I find like trying to think something through is counterproductive for me often. I kind of get too tangled. So mindfulness of the body is so helpful in calming and creating the conditions for just a clear seeing, understanding. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, so we'll have break up into groups again for some discussion, and you might choose to mix it up a bit. What you can think about, discuss together. You know, sometimes we can and do and are aware of our own wise and kind intentions in a situation. Sometimes we really know, and we know that we have a good intention. But then the outcome is not what we wished for or expected. So, you know, our world is complex place with, and there are many forces in operation. So what you might talk about is, how did you relate to that outcome that was not the intended outcome? Were you able, you know, in other words, what attitude did you have? Were you able to bring an attitude of kindness towards yourself, kind of understanding what was your deepest intention? Or was there a sense of like failure or harshness on your part, blaming yourself, that kind of thing? So, you know, this can be a situation as simple as when you offered, you know, a helping hand to someone, but they reacted with anger or indignation, something that can be just something simple or something more complicated, but where you really were aware of your intention, but the outcome was not what you expected. So how did you handle that? Does anyone have any questions about that before we break up? Okay, so find some people that maybe you didn't sit with before.
About 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And for the people online, it's going to be hard to mix you up, but I'll put you back into your group and we'll rejoin you in about 15 minutes. So.
Okay, so welcome back, everyone online. Good to see you. What could you share from your group discussion? So what came up, and what stands out in your minds, or what was helpful, or what was painful that you're willing to share? Anyone? And of course online too. Yes.
Give her the mic.
And let me give you the mic.
Yeah, so what I was kind of thinking about in our group was, I think a lot of intention is associated with the outcome. Maybe we intend to try to be more relaxed in our day. And I think oftentimes for me, I'm very aware of, well, at the end of the day, am I more relaxed? Was my intention, did it follow through? Did I execute? I think intention is kind of about the process, and maybe our intention wasn't trying to make its way out fully how we wanted it to, but I think there's a lot to be learned through the process of just simply starting to set the intention.
Yes, right. Our skillful intentions, sometimes they just don't have the results that we wished for. But, you know, the world is just so complex. And I think we become aware of this through our practice, all the undercurrents and forces at play. Yeah. And yeah, could you just say your name also?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Astrid. Something that came up for me in in the group through just sharing my own example was that I noticed that sometimes when the outcome doesn't fulfill the intention, that there can be a tendency to sort of devalue having the intention in the first place, or that it was wrong, or that, you know, something wasn't right from the get-go. And I realized that even when things don't turn out the way the intention was sort of put out to the world or whatever, that there's still value in the intention in the first place, and just it being sort of given some thought and life and moved with into whatever the I don't want to say the goal, but you know, the vision is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the setting that I work in healthcare, and this comes up a lot. I see this a lot in caretakers having a lot of intentions and their actions and the things they do to take care of their loved ones, and it doesn't always turn out the way they intended, and they feel like a failure, like I'm not doing this right, I'm not helping this person. And I feel like it's helpful to remind these people that there's value in the intention that you have of caring for these people and taking the time and making the space to do things to care for these people, even if they're not able to meet you and follow through with how you're trying to support them. You know.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm glad that you're there for them in that way. And we do tend to, our culture is so blaming, right? We tend to just turn on ourselves. And so this clarity that we gain through this practice, and to know that, you know, my intention really was beneficial and wholesome. I just have to let go of the outcome, right? Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay.
There's Paula on the one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Paula.
There.
It's Paula, I was please.
I would just like to add a tidbit that I think is important. And that is what you said earlier, Susan, about when the outcome is something not that you intended, and you know, and if you're starting to react to the outcome that you didn't intend, to feel it and notice your body, to take that pause before you do or say anything, to take the pause and remember to feel what's going on in your body. And then try to relax parts of your body that are reacting and, you know, contracting or whatever. And that should bring you back to the more centered place, I hope, or the more mindful place, so that you won't open your mouth and say something you regret, or, you know, do some action that you regret. That I just love that idea about notice your body, be in your body, you know, and be aware of your body, because your body could tell you. You know, and then you can help yourself by calming your body, I think. I mean, I'll try it. I haven't actually been able to do that. I may have heard about it before, but I think this is maybe the first time I've heard it. And I love that idea. I've heard of just trying to pause before you speak, but I love that part of, okay, but what is my body feeling like? And I could see how that would probably really be very helpful. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Paula. And I think we really do recognize through this practice that the body has its own wisdom. And really, when we can relax and listen and be with the sensations, the breath,
yeah.
You know, center ourselves, things can really become quite clear.
Yeah.
And there's wisdom there for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Oh,
Hi, I'm Madeline, and my group, I think we all had a little bit of a harder time with this topic, just to try to figure out what our intentions are with that. It's something that maybe, I don't know, I mean, seems like it was the case for all of us, but that it's a little bit something that we haven't reflected on a whole much before.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm glad that you're reflecting on it now.
It's hard to be aware of our intentions when, you know, our minds are busy and looking toward the future, running the past, running conversations, you know. And our intentions really, they're powerful. They're powerful. And so to get a sense of that and to start to really ask yourself, you know, when you do something, my deepest intention, deepest, you know, the beauty of this practice. Okay, anyone else? Before we move on. Well, thank you. Thank you all. And thanks for your sharing. Okay, so I'm gonna turn things over to Jim for a few minutes here.
Okay. I'm going to run my own version of a pledge break here real quick. Hopefully it's not as boring as the ones you see on TV. And hopefully I can also tie it a little bit into what we're doing here today. As some of you, or hopefully most of you know, in November we start our annual fund drive. And so on the website, you'll see that there is a form to do that. And people who want to do it immediately can do that. I encourage people to do a repeating donation. I kind of suspect that most of you people, because you're in this class and if you complete it, you're going to go through to next June anyway. You're going to be sticking around. So I think that's a possibility. There's a very pragmatic reason for it, which is that we do need to raise money to keep these doors open and keep everything going here. But the other part of it that I hope is also inherent in this is that it is designed to build community. There's a commitment on this side to teach, to do that type of thing. And hopefully there's a commitment on your side for building this community, making it strong going in the future. And I think when I see the interaction between all of you and what's happening, I think that type of community is there. And when you make a pledge, and the amount is really kind of irrelevant, and we don't even suggest an amount. You find what's appropriate to you. I know a lot of you people are donating here at the end of this class anyway, so you know you can work it in through what you feel is comfortable mixed with that. But by doing that, what you're doing is you are giving back into this community, into this place, into these people, and that's how we're going to strengthen this. Coming out of the pandemic, there has been a problem with people wandered off and people lost the habit of coming into the center. So we're trying to rebuild that back to where it was pre-pandemic so that we can offer more classes, have more teachers, have more of everything. And that's going to take commitment, not only on my side on the board and everything else. It takes commitment and it takes interaction with all of the members, volunteers, people who can only do it financially, people who come in here and sit with us, all of those are greatly, greatly valued. So I would really appreciate it if you at least take the time. Like I said, if you just do a pledge, you don't have to give money right now. Drop it off here on a monthly basis if that's what works for you. If you don't want to be bothered with that, go online and work it out that way. But it is for the future of the center. And I believe in this center. I think it's an important asset to our community. But we have no corporate sponsors like public television does. So it has to come from the membership. So please support us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll just have a few minutes to sit together. I'll do a little guiding. So take your comfortable but alert posture. And a few deep breaths. Yeah. Letting go as you breathe out of any worries or tensions or related to the discussions we've had and covered a lot of very intense topics. We can relax the body, the mind tends to follow. Maybe even slowing and deepening the breath a bit. An intention can be to care for ourselves in this very deep way that this practice offers. A very deep way of caring for ourselves. And we can bring that intention of care out into the world when we leave, stand up on the cushion, the chair. Your intention to develop your own good heart and the wisdom within is a very good intention. So some words from the Metta Sutta to end our sitting, our time together. Let none deceive another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, should one cherish all living beings. Thank you all for your presence here today and for your sharing and for your willingness to develop the beauty within in the way that this practice offers. And so we wish you a good month. We'll see you, hopefully we'll see you again in December. And of course you'll be receiving the reflections around right intention or wise intention, as I like to call it. So stay well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.